Welcome to the Free to Lead podcast, journeys of leaders, driven by passion, inspired by purpose. My name is Will Steele. I'm the host of the show. I'm a transformational business and leadership coach. I say transform the business owner, you transform the business. So if you want to be the fullest version of yourself in the world, decisive, taking clear action, moving forward, producing the kind of results and having the kind of impact you really want to have in your business, in your life, and in the world, then stay tuned. The people on this show that we interview are handpicked. They've got pearls of wisdom. They're going to share their breakdowns, breakthroughs, their challenges, what they've dealt with, how they've grown, and how they've become free to lead. If you'd like to be a guest on the show, I'd love to hear from you, and I'll be telling you how you can get in contact in about 20 minutes' time. Right now, let's dive into today's episode. Welcome to today's episode of Free to Lead, Journeys of Leaders, driven by passion, inspired by purpose. And today I'm joined by Anmol Singh. He's a trader and known as a trader. He's written books, two books, and his own trading company. He's a keynote speaker. He started when he was 18, trading. He had $10,000 and lost it quickly, he says. Gained lots of valuable lessons, though, and rules that he now lives by. And he may have said of himself, I was a loser at high school, a loser in the stock market, until he understood that trading was more mental than anything else. There's a psychology to it, which is what we would love him to embellish and fill us in on today. He's also got several other businesses. So without further ado, Anmol, welcome to Free to Lead.
Thanks for having me. Looking forward to chatting with you.
Yeah, great. If you just give us a little backstory of how you ended up living in New York, originally from India, with your own trading company, etc., that would be great.
No, definitely. Grew up in India and always felt like I didn't fit in, or I felt I was kind of like an outlier. So for me, I always had the desire, like, I want to move out of the country. I want to experience different cultures. I want to really grow myself, because there's the identity that you're born with, and then there's the identity that you create as you grow and improve. So for me, it was always about finding myself and creating myself. And I felt where I was born in India, I felt like I didn't belong or fit in, or people maybe didn't see me for who I really was. So for me, I used that as, okay, I'm going to go to get a university degree, move outside the country and just recreate myself, right? Nobody knows who I am. I can be whoever I want to be. I can create my identity. So that was the reason I moved to UK. And I was like taking a university degree, business honors degree, business management. And I was like really shy, right? Introverted, really shy kid. So for me, it was like getting out of my shell of my living with my parents and getting out and making things happen. There in college, like I applied for, literally joined every little society, every club I could join, like everything I could be involved with people so I can get out of my shell and really develop into who I wanted to be. And then in college, there was a bunch of guys, they were all like talking about stocks or whatever. And I didn't know anything about the stock market at that time. And this was the last thing that I thought I would ever do, because growing up, like, I was horrible at math, just horrible with numbers. Last thing I thought, I'll do something with numbers. But then life has a funny way of just bringing that to you. So as the people were started talking about stocks, I was like, okay, can I join like an investment society or something? They're like, oh, we don't have that. We have the entrepreneurship society in university. We don't have nothing for traders and investors. So I'm like, why don't we create one? So we created one. We called it the Trading and Investing Society. And we started with just like three guys, and then eventually grew into 5, 10, 15, 20. And now I left the university in 2013, 2014. And now it's still a thriving club even now, 2025. And we started that. It would just be like weekly meetings of people meeting and talking about a book we read, or what did we learn? We watched CNBC, just trying to share ideas and figure the markets out. So that's how I started. And just in my dorm room, figuring it out. And it was not I think a lot of people find it hard to be alone. For me, it came naturally, because all I really did is I substituted my Xbox for a computer, and it's the same thing. You're just playing on the computer. That's how I started in trading.
Great. And then how did that develop into what it is today, into a business and based in New York City?
Yeah. So I started with, I borrowed money from my parents. I said, I want to do this trading investing thing. I tried to get internships, jobs. I'm not getting callbacks. Could you please help me? Could you give me a loan? I'll pay you back. And my parents, like Indian conservative, they never invested in a stock entire life, not even today, right? So for them, it was like, why do you want to do this? It's gambling. You're going to lose all your money. I was like, no, I think I'll figure it out. I'll learn. I have some good mentors. They're like, and my dad gave me the 10,000, and it was telling my mom, like, oh, he's going to lose it. But you know what? Let him learn the lesson the hard way. He's going to lose all the money. Let him learn the lesson the hard way to never gamble in the markets. And then, sure enough, I lost, I think, 7,000 of that in the first 4 weeks of me trading. Lost it. I left with $3,000. I was like, okay, I got to do something because I'm good with my analysis and I'm pretty good with even the stocks that I'm picking. But it's like the emotions, I'm not able to manage it. Like, I don't get out when I'm supposed to get out. I should take a small loss, but I keep holding. And then I started writing a blog back in the day. I would just write my research on all these stocks. I'm like, I don't have the money to actually invest, but I'll write my research and just publicly put it out there. And I started writing the blog. And then one day I got hit up by Yahoo Finance. They were like, hey, we're looking for freelance article writers for our Yahoo Finance website. And we saw your blog. It's really good. And we'll pay you. You just want to write these articles. And as a college student, I'm like, okay, how much are you going to pay? And they're like, and depending on the length of the article, anywhere from $500 to $1,500. I'm like, really? That's perfect. I'll do it. Then all I would do is just sit there and write articles all day long because they were paying me. Then I took that 7,000 I lost by writing articles. I built it back to the $10,000. And then from there, I said, okay, from this point onward, I have to learn how to do this the right way. I'm not going to gamble. I'm not going to just speculate. I need to know what I'm doing. And then I saw like an online webinar this person was teaching about trading and investing. And he was like the only person that I found that was like being really honest. Everybody online was like, how much money you can make in the stock market? Buy my course and you're going to make $1 million in 30 days. Like, I already could smell it from far away that this is not real. And then this one webinar I attended, this guy was talking about the pitfalls of trading or the mistakes you're going to make, the losses you're going to take. And I was like, I want to learn from him. And I paid him $7,000 to take his course, paid it, trusted him. And then that's how I worked my way up in the company. And eventually the company gave me their money to trade and they would take 30% of everything that I made for them. So I just kept trading their money and working my way up in the company.
Great. And then at some point, you must have exited that and gone into your own business.
Yeah. So I did that for them for about 5 years. Worked my way up from like $50,000 of their money to I was trading at $1.10 million of their money. So when 2015, that company got bought out by a different trading company. So at that point, I called my mentor who taught me how to trade. I said, hey, what are you doing? Are you joining this new company that's been we've been merging into? Or should we start something of our own? I'm your case study right here. You taught me how to trade. I'm doing really well. I'm your case study. You're a really good educator. Why don't we team up? I'll handle the online, the business side of things, like starting the website, running the business, and you create the curriculums and you teach people how to trade. So we teamed up together in 2015 and we had a nice, beautiful 10-year partnership. And it's been great. So that's how we turned it into an education company later on.
And the business is, what's the business called now?
The business is Live Traders, livetraders.com. So there we do training, education, courses. And then every morning I run a live stream where I trade live every day. So they can see my screen, they can see my webcam, almost like they're sitting next to me. Win or lose, they'll get to see it in real time. It's like a performance sport, basically. So that's like a membership product that we have.
Oh, fantastic. Sounds exciting. Sounds exciting. And with the business then, so how have you grown that business then, just by having people subscribe, or how does it work?
Yeah, so when we started the business, we had an influx of clients already from our last company that we were doing it for, because a lot of people were like, we would like to trade with you guys as well because we trust you. So we had an influx of clients already that came in from the last company that we left. That was a good place to start with. But then I think we were the first ones in the social media really to step up, because 2015, people were still starting and figuring stuff out. And we would post videos on YouTube almost every week. We would post content all around social media channels. And at that time, a lot of people were doing these kind of things. We do webinars, we do all these things that people do now regularly. But then I think the difference maker was the company name, Live Traders. Nobody that I know, even now, people don't really trade live. They might have a newsletter, they'll send you like an alert service, they'll send you trades, they might even sell you a course, but you don't get to actually see them do it live in real time. And that's, I think, what grew our business is word of mouth. People were like, wow, these guys are just sharing their account statements, everything online publicly. That's crazy. So I think people wanted to check it out. And I think that grew our business a lot.
Great, great. And you do courses and stuff like that for people as well?
Yeah, courses we still do. We have either on-demand courses that people can learn at their own pace. And then we have the live streams, which are every day. You can come in, ask questions in real time. That's actually probably the best learning lesson, to get feedback in real time. Hey, I'm looking at Microsoft stock. I'm thinking of buying it here. What do you think? And then I can give them feedback. And then more importantly, rather than watching me trade, I think the best learning lessons are the days when I'm struggling, to see how I handle myself when I'm losing. That is the difference maker between a good trader and not a not so good trader, is the ability to take the losses and be okay with them and keep your losses small. So I think those are the learning lessons. And yeah, and once a year we do a live event where in person we meet up 4 days and we teach and train traders.
Yeah, you talk about mental fortitude in your literature. Can you say a bit more about that? Because you said you realized it was more of a mental game. So there's something, and you just mentioned it there. So can you say a little bit more about that?
Definitely. So trading is, I would say, 80% like your mental fortitude, mental resilience, and discipline, right? Because we all could be in the exact same stock. And then one person might get out really quickly, take a small loss, and walk away. And the other person is still holding on. Maybe it'll come back up, right? They keep holding. Let me buy more shares. Maybe it'll come back up. And that's hope. And hope is not a strategy, right? And then what happens is most traders, they'll take like these small profits, small gains, and then when they lose it all, right? They might have like series of 10 wins and then one losing investment and they lose it all. So that's not risk management. That's not good money management. And that's trading on emotions, that trading on fear and greed, all these things that influence our decision-making. Whereas good traders make decisions based on data, like a casino. Like if you go to a casino today and you win $1 million, they're not going to mind. They're going to give it to you. In fact, they're going to say, here's some free drinks. Here's a free stay. Keep playing, because they know the longer you play, in the end of it, they're going to come out. They have this edge. That's what good traders do. I don't care about the next trade that I take or how I do today or how I do this week. But I know if I follow my strategy, has this percentage of edge, that at the end of the month, I'm going to be profitable. At the end of the quarter, I'm going to be profitable. At the end of the year, I'm going to be profitable. But day to day, it could fluctuate, right? So I think you have to have the statistics in your favor. An example of that is, let's say, if all your winners are 2 times the size of your average loser. So every loser, let's say you automatically get out at a $1,000 loss. Yes. And every winner, you automatically get out at a $2,000 loss. So then you only need to be right 40% of the time. You could take 100 trades, lose on 60 of them. You lose $1,000 each, you lost 60,000. But on 40 of them, you make $2,000 each, you made 80,000. Net, net, you're going to make 20,000. So when we have the statistics in our favor, there's no uncertainty, because we're just, it's a sample size. We're just trading the sample size. I know out of 100, I only need to be right 40, but typically I'll be right about 60.
What's the biggest loss you've ever had in one day?
Biggest loss I've ever had in one day. Oh, you really want to open up that can of worms, huh? I'll tell you.
I'm genuinely interested.
The biggest loss, the good part is, for the most part in my life, I've been very disciplined. I use automated exit points. So when it hits like my predefined loss limit, I get out. The one time I didn't was when I was super overconfident. I was like crushing it. I was on this winning streak. I just thought I could do no wrong. Everything I'm doing is just like gold. And you get overconfident, you get really complacent, and you throw all the rules out of the window. And I was options trade on Netflix that I was doing one time. And I was supposed to be out at, my loss limit was 5,000, but it hit 5,000. I'm like, but it looks like it's ready to almost come back down again, or again, hope, greed, all these things come in. I'm like, no, it's going to work. And I kept taking more size, adding more money into the same exact trade. And it was like a six-figure plus loss in like a span of an hour. in an hour. But that's what happens when, you know, you let your emotional control go. Or if you ignore your checklist and you ignore your rules and you just start trading on, I could do no wrong, market has a way of really humbling you. And if you're not disciplined or in control of your emotions, market will humble you, because market's bigger than you or I or anybody else. But it took me a good few months to recover that loss that I had that day. It took me 2 months of winning trades to just get back what I lost in 2 hours.
Wow. Yeah, life has a way of handing out its lessons, and they're usually pretty painful. The good ones.
Yeah. I always tell people, it's not really a lesson until you feel like somebody punched you in the face, in your stomach, and you feel like throwing up. And every trader at some point has felt that feeling when we ignore our mistakes. It's like the people being punched and you just feel nauseous. You feel like throwing up. Yeah. Then you know you've learned the lesson, because you don't want to feel that again.
Very good. Very good. I can resonate with that for sure. What's the biggest challenge you got right now in your business?
I think right now, the biggest challenge, or I guess the biggest opportunity for us, is to really build like a team that is on board with the vision of where we're going, right? And having their buy-in so that they are leading the business and I don't have to micromanage things. I think that's been my biggest thing for a long time, is to find that A player, your right-hand man in your company, that you can just trust that they got it, so that I need to just do my part, which is to go out there, speak, teach, coach, do the trading, but then have somebody run that business side of things. But I think I have somebody now, so we're just working through things. And yeah, that's the challenge, is to create an A player that you don't have to tell them every day to day what to do. They know what to do themselves and they can go out and make it happen for you.
Yeah. Yeah. So in your experience of working with those people or managing people or having people, it's like having them own the result, right?
Yeah, having them own the result, having them own the outcome, having them own the process so that they can execute on that process, and that all you have to do is just guide the big picture, not the to-do list. You give them the vision, and then they create the steps to make it happen.
Yeah, there's an interesting thing I've opened up with one of my clients. He was complaining about all his staff, and they're not getting the job done. They're lazy, they're this, they're that. And I said, hold on, that's you just pointing your finger out there. What's the context inside of which you're working? And he couldn't tell me. I'm just trying to get the job done. I'm just frustrated. And I can't get people. I can't find the right people. I said, what if you considered that instead of giving people a job description and telling them what they should do, you give them an outcome? They have an outcome to produce. They're accountable. What they're accountable for is producing that outcome, that result, that outcome. And you're not going to tell them what to do. You're there. There's some of that, but you're there as a guide. You're there as a resource. But their job is to produce that outcome. And if they're not producing the outcome, then they're failing in their job. If they're producing the outcome, they're being successful in that job. But it's their job. It's their outcome that they're paid to produce. Now, when I say all that, what do you hear for yourself?
Yeah, I think that's the key, because I think for most part, I've been not really holding them accountable really to like the outcome per se. I think I've been more like, I need these things done, and just delegating things. Yeah. So I think that is definitely a piece that I've had a challenge with too over time. Cause as I mentioned, growing up, typical introvert. to have that ability of being able to lead in that way where you can hold people accountable for their outcome, I think it's a huge thing, and it's a pretty good difference maker for sure.
Yeah. It's a huge difference between telling people what to do and holding people to account for what they've promised to produce.
Yeah. And typically, I guess the question for you is, let's say you give them the outcome and they don't produce that. Like, how are you having that conversation with them to say, okay, here's the next steps from here, and where do we go from here?
Let's play that one out, right? So if somebody is not performing, they're not producing the result they're accountable to produce, and then I have to get into it. What happened? I've got to get inside their world, get inside how they're seeing it, how they're experiencing it, what's having them make the decisions that they're making. See, if I then fall back into telling them what to do, I'm now holding their hand, right? I'm now doing it for them and with them. I've got to get them to grow. I've got to get them to develop. And how you develop people is you've got to somehow get them to think, get them to come up with stuff. Now they may come up with stuff and you go, now I tried that. That didn't work. That's not the way to go. So you could say that. You said, look, I've tried that. I did that and that didn't work. So what else could you do? Mm. You really want to see, in my experience, what I've found works. If you can get it to come out of their mouth, what they need to do to correct what's happening, or find out what is the way they're seeing it, get in their head. You've got to be able to get in a person's world to be able to understand what they're missing, what they're not seeing, or how they're seeing it. Such, because every action is a perfect match, a mirror, or a response to how it's all showing up for them. If something looks threatening, your behavior is you're going to run away or shrink back. If something looks inviting and warm and think you're going to be all opened up. It's just in a perfect match. Your brain is scanning the whole environment. So if they're doing something that to you, like, that's really stupid, or that's really, can't they see what's going on? Quite normally, people would be complaining about them or telling them off or trying to correct them versus, hold on a second, just tell me, how do you see that? Or how does that occur to you? Or when you look at that, how does that show up for you? What is it telling you? You somehow got to get what's having them think the way they think. If you can crack that, and it's something to practice, to be honest. You could start trying not to tell people things and just try getting their world so that you can then elicit from them. And there's a certain amount of instruction, obviously, right? If you're developing people. But like you said, give you the money and you go off and trade and you made some mistakes. But you're willing to learn. Like, you couldn't see at the time what was going wrong. Then you got some instruction. Oh, okay. So now it started to look different. The stock market looks different to you than it did when you started, when you see the numbers going up and down.
Yeah, it's almost like a new language. When you first start trading stocks, there's like, you have no idea what's going on. Why is it going up? Why is it going down? And when you learn it, now it's almost like learning a different language that for most people, they don't see it. And then you see it very differently. But yeah, I think for me, it's like definitely, I think what you said is spot on. Because for me, like, for example, my Airbnb business and some of the other businesses that I'm in that are not located in New York or in this country.
Yeah.
So easy for me not to micromanage because I'm like, okay, she's handling it. She's the CEO of that company. And I don't even look at it. Just I look at the end results at the end of the quarter or in the year or what we did. And I'm not involved in anything. But because the trading thing is I'm involved every day. Sometimes I find it a part of my personality is just I know that they'll figure out the outcome. But I already know the answers. I'll just give it to them. So you never end up developing them into the leader because I'm like, man, I'm going to have to coach you to do this. You know what? I could just do it right now and I'll just do it or I'll start to micromanage. So that is definitely a thing that for me, it's been something to work through over time. It's gotten a whole lot better with like now a team. But in the beginning, when I started, it was just me and my business partner, two of us. We do all the tasks together and we just get it done. Now we have 7-8 people. So slowly starting to just take myself out of the equation so that I can come in and I can just trade and focus on what I'm good at and then have everybody else manage the business side of things.
Yeah. Sometimes you have to micromanage somebody if they're off, if they're failing, and to get them back up onto speed. But if you're doing that over time, all the time, you're just too much in the business.
Yeah.
You're gonna miss the big picture. So you have 100%. To develop and train your people to get their job done. And it's never done, is it? It's just never done. People, you know how to do this. You know how to do this. You've done this already. What's going on? And yet, that's when you have to intervene. Maybe they're sabotaging something, or maybe they're off in some way, and you've got to get into what's going on with them.
Yeah, 100%.
Awesome. All right, great. I think you told us how people could reach out to you. Why would people reach out to you? So if they're watching this or listening to this podcast, and you go, God, I want to reach out to that guy. I want to find out more about what he does and how it could help me. So who's your market? Who's the people that you're looking to approach you or come into your business?
Yeah, typically people will come to me for one of two reasons. So one person is, okay, I really want to learn how to invest and trade in the stock market, either as a full-time career, like that's their sole thing they want to do as for a living, or people who have a job and they just... but they know that they need to be invested in the markets and they need to still be building their money. So they're not just working on their business all the time. Because for me, it was like, I can build all these businesses or I can keep trading all my life. But what if something happens to me and I can't do it anymore? Then I'm screwed because I'm reliant on that thing. So a lot of our clients come in that are like business owners or maybe they have another job, but they do this on the side still to generate extra income so that they can create that lifestyle. And then the second type of people that usually come are, they're not even traders, investors. They have their business owners. So I run a group called Evolve Mastermind. We have a great group of investors, angel investors, VCs, real estate people. We got business owners in there, technology people. And we do sessions every month on different parts of our life. Because for me, the biggest thing was like, when I got all the financial success that I wanted, like I got everything I wanted, condo in New York City, got the car, got the house, got everything. But there was like, felt like there's something was missing because I was just focused on that money thing. And when I got it and I realized that, oh, it doesn't really make me happy and my health is a mess, like what's money worth? So that's when we started the mastermind. So we focus on the financial pillar first. We get that taken care of. We make that money first. And then now, how do we use our money to improve all other areas of our life, our health, our relationships, our communities, our businesses, and really start to build it into a cohesive system? So we have that as part of the mastermind. But before your listeners, I'd love to give them a free copy of my book. They can just go to gogo.myname, so unmole.net. And there they can just cover the shipping, and then we'll send out the book to them completely for free. And I think that's a great place to start, because you'll see all the mindset shifts that I made in my own life that will help you potentially get to your goals as well. And I put that in a big format of everything that I did over the last 10, 15 years and the mindset shifts that you need to make to get to your desired outcomes and desired goals.
Awesome. So that's G-O, right?
Dot,
G-O
yep.
dot.
Mole. Dot
oh, so A-N-M-O-L dot.
Net.
Dot net.
Yep. Unfortunately, somebody has dot com for my name and I was just trying to get it. They just don't want to sell it to me. So we're stuck with dot for now.
Really awesome, Anmol, having you on the show. And thanks for being on Free to Lead.
No, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Great. All right, sir.
Will Steele here. Thanks so much for listening to the Free to Lead podcast, Journeys of Leaders, Driven by Passion, Inspired by Purpose. If you're a successful leader and you're driven by passion and you're inspired by your purpose and you'd love to be a guest on the show, we'd love to have you. Just visit podcast.willsteele.com. That's podcast.willsteele.com. Will Steele is spelled W-I-L-L-S-T-E-E-L, all one word. If you got something out of today's interview and you'd love to share it on your social media, we'd love you to do that. You can take a screenshot on your phone, you can text it to a friend or post it on your socials. And if you know someone you think they'd be a great guest, tag them on social media or just let them know about the show and include the hashtag Free to Lead. I love seeing your posts and suggestions. We're regularly putting out new episodes and content. And to make sure you don't miss any episodes, go ahead and subscribe. Your thumbs up, your ratings, your reviews, and your comments go a long way to help promote the show, and that means a lot to me and my team. If you want to know more, go to our website, willsteele.com, or follow me on LinkedIn under Will Steele, or Facebook under Will Steele, or Instagram under Will Steele Coaching. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time.